author behind Living Without Fear and the co-publisher of the Amazon best-selling Inspired Journeys. If you're ready to embark on a journey of boundless possibilities, I'm here for you. Do you know someone who could benefit from today's episode? Share this podcast with them. Don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter. Join me on YouTube. And if you enjoyed what you heard, leave a short review or rate it on your favorite podcast platform with a lot of stars. Your support means the world to me, and I'm truly grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you. And today, I'm so excited to have the first man on my podcast, and it's Vincent Stone. Vincent is a professional speaker and masterful storyteller who captives audiences globally. Specializing in conscious communication, he guides influencers and thought leaders in impactful and ethical speaking, covering storytelling, stage dynamics, audience engagement, and ethical persuasion. Vincent's multidisciplinary approach incorporates rapport building, NLP, and more, empowering entrepreneurs to refine spoken language. Having trained 350,000 plus students from 40 countries, Vincent's mission is to elevate conscious communication skills, amplifying impact and influence for coaches, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. Welcome, dear Vincent, to the show.
Thank you, Esther. I appreciate you having me on. I'm glad to be the first male, so I appreciate that.
So, Vince, let's start right with my favorite question. What has been your turning moment or moments in life?
My turning moments. Well, I guess I would say there would be two turning moments that would be the primary. And the first one, when I was younger, around 28 years old, I had grown up in a lot of lower middle class poverty dysfunction. And watching my mom work three jobs and never being able to pay the bills, I became very driven to become wealthy. And, you know, I didn't have mentors or anything like that, but I just did what it took to go out, and I found a way and through the stock market. And then eventually, as a speaker, teaching stock market strategies, then other business. So that was the first turning point where I went from a challenging environment to making very good money, traveling around the world and educating people. And then, you know, of course, as a younger person, thinking that money would solve my problems, because that's all I heard as a little boy is we don't have enough money. And the stress was around no money. So I went out focused on money so I could take care of my mom and do those cool things. But even when I made money, it didn't resolve the internal problems. So I think the next turning point came when the real estate crash hit and I lost pretty much everything. And what was probably the worst thing in my life, if you've ever lost money before, you might know the pain, but losing it all, you know, around that time, my mom passed away. A lot of things hit me, almost like the universe was punishing me. So I thought at the time, I felt like maybe it was karmic. But what turned out to be, I thought the worst case became the best case scenario, because it moved me to live with a guru from India in the forest for a year. And I went from the outside external world into the internal dimension of who I am. And that has been the most profound journey in my life that has shifted everything for me into a different realm of what I want to work on and teach people, which is why conscious communication, consciousness in these areas are becoming more the front instead of making money, which of course we all need to make money in the world we live, but it's really about helping people to heal from the inside out and to understand who they are from the inside out. So that has been the greatest aspect of it all.
Mm, thank you. Why do you think it's so important to concentrate on the internal world? Because we all come from the external when we grow up? And why go inside?
Well, you know, I don't think people realize that the inside is where the truth is. The outside is a projection from the inside. So we have two eyes, which are physical, and the two eyes represent duality. So when we look into the external world, we're seeing the laws that are manifest in reality, which is like the law of polarity, where there's two sides of every one thing, which is the battery or the pole. And our eyes will look at duality and create the good and the bad, the up and the down, the left, the right, the dark, the light. But that all is, you know, just visions filtered into our mind. And so the whole world, we tend to get beat up or pushed around by circumstance. Just like growing up, that's what I believed. My mom would always say, we don't have money because the economy's bad, or because there's no jobs, or there's stagflation, or your father doesn't pay child support. And this is what most people do. They spend their lives looking at the external circumstances, and those are the reasons that hold them back, that cause all the issues. However, when we change our focus from the external to the internal, there's only one eye, which many would call the third eye, or the deeper level, and that's unity consciousness, realizing that there is not separation, there's only one. And when we go deep within ourselves and we start to ask the right questions, we start to realize that I'm creating this entire projection outside of me. And it's through my thinking and through my feeling world that I project under the screen of consciousness, whatever my filters are. So I always like to tell people in my seminars that many people believe we're living in this reality, but the truth is there's 8 billion realities on the planet, and everybody's projecting onto this blank screen we call consciousness based on the filters that they have from their past. So if you're grown up, if you grew up in poverty and you grew up in very negative, dysfunctional circumstances, well, then we see the world through those eyes. And then we see more of that in our society because that's what we're coming in from. On the other hand, if you grew up in an environment where they lifted you up and there was wealth consciousness and different things like this, you create that in your reality. And I prove this by saying, well, if you think about the worst economies in the world, you see people becoming billionaires. So if it's really a bad economy out there, how is it that people become billionaires? And yet in the best economies, there's people that will still make excuses of why the world doesn't work. They can't make money. And so to me, the inside is real, the real, but we've never been trained that way. So we spend our lives chasing the external, which is an infinite loop, if you will.
And why do you think it's sometimes necessary to get wealthy as well?
You know, it's funny, the wealth, I'm really starting to look at words differently, especially as I'm moving into this conscious communication space. And I realize that our words are the architects of our reality, because whatever we're thinking, we speak, and a word is just a spoken thought. And then when you add emotion to it, it becomes a belief, you know? And so even when I think of wealth versus rich, I think rich people have a lot of money. However, a lot of times they are broken spirits. They don't have the health. They don't have the relationships with their family, but they have money because they've sacrificed everything to have more of this illusion we call money. Wealth, I think, is a different word in regard to a wealthy person understands the abundance from within, understanding that the abundance comes from us, the infinite being that we are. And once we really understand who we are and we operate with our language and our feelings in alignment, then the wealth is ever flowing. So, you know, money's going to come and go. Everything that's temporal has a beginning and an end. And that to me is not real. That is the dance of consciousness and energy. The real is the one watching all of it move through the space, which is who we are. And so the wealth is understanding who we are to me. And that's the important part. And I think once we get that right from the inside out, money will be attracted to the higher frequency, the nature of who we are. If you think about the greats of the past, the ascended masters, whether it be Jesus or Buddha, or any of these ascended masters, they had the power to be super wealthy if they wanted to, because they commanded crowds. They had the energy, but they did not focus on that because they knew there was something deeper that was more important than spending your time chasing currency. And so I think it just depends on where people are, what they want to do with their lives, because we are the creators. And so if whether you want to chase the money or whether you want to chase the wisdom or understanding, I don't know. It's interesting. I realized my whole life I was chasing money. And then when I was at the ashram and in meditation, it showed me that money should be chasing me because I'm the value. And I think every listener is the value. We're the ones that create every dollar or pound or whatever currency you're being paid in. You've created that. It didn't come from outside of you. You added value to the world and you were paid a certain amount for that energy exchange. So give more value to the world and more money will chase you.
And how do you think about money today? How do you talk with money today?
Well, you know, I still have patterns that come up that are negative patterns, that are poverty thinking patterns. Because if you spend your life being programmed in that, my mom was not a fan of wealthy people. She thought, you know, she had to speak negatively about money. We always had bills that were overdue. So we never had enough. I am not enough. We don't have enough. And so what I tell people as well is, you know, if you think about it, as a child born, they are programmed because when they come into the world, they're operating in theta brainwave from 0 to 7 years old. And they're not thinking, they're just absorbing. And you look at a child, they're just full of love and wonder and joy. That's our true nature until the mind gets in and programs us like a sheet thrown over consciousness. And then now we have all these issues. And so growing up, if parents keep saying, I don't have enough, we don't have enough, we can't afford it. You know, you flunk kindergarten, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're not, all these are programming us, right? It's not their fault because they don't know they're doing it. You know, they do the best they can. But the thing is, I still have programs from that childhood that I struggle, you know, with the significance, am I good enough to make money? And so what conscious communication does is allows me to bring awareness to the words I use. And so you'll be amazed if you listen to people and you bring your awareness to even videos or people, you'll hear how many times people say things that work against their flow. So they want to be wealthy, but then you hear them say, I'm not good at that, or I can't, I don't, I won't, I shouldn't, but all these words and many others are actually blocks. And if you think about unconscious communication, 90% of the day we're thinking and speaking unconsciously programs from the past. And therefore it's like, I guess a metaphor would be like if you're climbing, if you had this big wall and a rope you had to climb, like the military, and you had one arm that's trying to climb it and like 50 other arms pushing you off, trying to knock your hand off the rope. That's what's happening. We're conscious of the one that we have on the rope because that's our desire, but we're missing all the other ones that are pre-programmed in from the past that are blocking us from achieving our objective. So until we bring awareness to the words we're using, which are from the thoughts we think, and we start to listen to our own language and other people's language, you can start to pick it up very quickly, that the stories and the beliefs and all of that. So it's about bringing the awareness to ourselves, the words we use, and then also to the other, and to hear their words so you understand them better. And it's amazing if you do this, in 5 minutes, you'll hear people using all these words that are blocking their flow.
What worked best for you to reprogram your mind about money?
To reprogram?
Yeah. Do you have some sentences which worked for you best, or how do you get aware of your blocks and still beliefs maybe getting in the way?
When I started the journey, I read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill many, many times. And I started to speak. I put my story is really interesting because when I read the book, I was not a reader. I'm dyslexic. I didn't read my first book until that book. And I struggled with reading. But when I got that book in my hands, I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't I have this book in school? Because this book spoke to me. It spoke to me because it was about what's coming from within me. It was about the words I use. So I actually took his steps and I put them on my mirror. And I remember putting on the mirror, I made $100,000, which was astronomical amount of money at my point. I was broke and in debt, but I put it on my mirror and I read it to myself every morning upon waking. And I set it in the mirror and I would speak it out loud with emotion and power. And at night before I went to bed, when the subconscious mind is moving in and those brainwaves are changing to absorb it. And I began, and at first you feel like you're lying to yourself because you're speaking to yourself, saying I have $100,000 in my account, and you know you don't in the physical world, so you feel like a liar. However, what's funny about that is as you keep saying it, you start to believe it. That's why people that lie will start to believe their own lies because they hear it so many times, it's a belief, and they start to just embody it. So I started to embody it and just acting as if. Now, of course, if you have more money, you walk different, you talk different, you've embodied something that shifts your energy to a higher frequency. And then within a year and a half, I had well over 100,000 in my account. In fact, hundreds of thousands that I had made through trading. And it blew my mind that this actually came true. And that was the beginning of me reprogramming. But again, then I can, if we don't watch it, we can become very, very attached to the money. And now it's all about the money. So the ashram and the journey of yoga nidra and things deeper into my inner realms made me realize what I really want, what everybody really wants is what they already have, which is the happiness and the joy. If I am a happy person and if I am exuding joy and happiness, very few people do that. If you notice, they walk around, they look miserable. And if we can get that place where our energy field is happy and joyful, people want to be magnetized to it. They want to give to us. They want to be around us. They want to buy whatever we have. So it's energetic. So I'm learning that my sales, my life, everything is about my energy that I put out, not so much about getting something, you know, or selling my product or selling my business. Or it's really about who am I showing up as and who wants to be around that. And this is a journey I'm still learning. So it's not like I'm way up here. It's more like I've realized through the journey that this is who I need to be to elevate on every level. And then you can make as much as you want. However, I think once we find out that energy is the magic, it's not that big of a deal how much we want to make. It's more about who we want to be and who we want to serve.
What are your practices, daily practices, to get you into the energy you really want to feel?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question, Esther. The daily practices I use is, first of all, meditation has been very big. I started meditating. I have an overactive mind. I'm sure a lot of people may, especially in today's society with all the stimulation from social media and everything. So I, during COVID, I started meditating, and because I wasn't very good at meditating through the modalities that I had learned, I decided one day, since I had all this time on my hands, to sit. And I just told myself, I'm going to sit here until I drop into such a peaceful realm that I know that I'm there, wherever there is. And so I started using this meditation practice called self-inquiry, which to me is the most profound there is. Because every other meditation practice focuses on the external breath, mantra, looking at a candle. However, this one focuses on the meditator. So the question is, who am I? Who am I? Every thought that arises, you question it. Who is thinking the thought? And then you're like, well, I am. Okay, so then if I'm thinking it, who is the I that's thinking it? And what happens with this that was so profound for me, and not everybody's going to resonate with this modality, but for those that do, it's very profound. And that is, instead of letting your thoughts go out, because a thought goes across our mind, that's a thought, right? That's a thought moving through like energy through space, and we pick it up as an antenna. But then once we grab hold of that thought, then we begin thinking about it. And that creates the chain reaction of fragmentation of thinking, which gets us into these cycles. So for me, when I ask the question, who's thinking the thought, instead of it going outward by thinking about the thought, I'm asking who's thinking it. So I'm going back inward to the source of all thinking. And when I go back to the source, my mind slows down because I'm not exciting the thinking. And I start to realize who I am not, because I don't know who I am. And I don't think anybody could ever speak that. But when you start to realize who you're not, the thoughts will dissipate and you'll have this peace and this amazing understanding that I can't explain. So that is the primary thing. And I started doing that 3 hours a day during COVID. And I did that for years. Now I do probably an hour, sometimes longer a day. And I don't, you know, for me, it takes that long because my mind won't even slow down until I'm like 45 minutes in. So a 20-minute meditation just doesn't do it for me. And I had to go deeper. Also, I'm just really speaking out decrees now. So because our words are so powerful, and I realize I've been speaking a lot of negative in my life. I found that 80% of my language was negative. You know, I don't want this. I don't like that. But I don't want to, all these things actually I've realized have been saying all my life. So I speak now what I love and what I appreciate. And I speak it loudly until I feel it in the body. Like I'll take a walk around the park and I'll say, I'm beginning to see the perfection of my life. And even in the bad stuff, I'm beginning to see that there is the I am presence in all of life. It's all perfection. So as I keep saying it, I start to rewire my neural highways to believe differently than I have in the past. Those are the two primary: quiet the mind with meditation, and then speak out what you love and what you appreciate so that you get that feeling in the body.
Do you journal as well?
I don't, and it's because I cannot read my own writing. I've never been very good at journaling because my arm gets really tired. Since I was a little kid in school, I've struggled to do it, right? So I feel like for that modality, it doesn't work as well for me, but I do think it's beautiful for people that enjoy it and can write better and can read their writing. I'm sure there maybe would be a benefit for me doing it, even though I can't, because it gets it out on paper. I just haven't resonated as much with that.
And do you have other practices, daily practices?
Well, I try to walk. I try to exercise. You know, I have an exercise regime that I do. And it always, I find that if I don't exercise, I definitely can feel the energy in my body get all stored up and causes more agitation. So I'm a big believer in movement. Even just walking, I used to think that's not exercise really, but as I get older now, I realize walking is a good thing. And being here in Denver right now, -3, I'm not walking today. So I definitely like walking in the sun versus the negative temperatures. Outside of that, I don't know if there's anything specifically else that I do. I do spend a lot of time studying on the areas that I'm talking about so that I spend a lot of energy focusing. I don't watch TV and things. I focus on the inner dimensions and what we're about and why we're here and how to use, you know, frequency, our language, our thinking, and everything like that. So that's part of the sadhana or the practice, you know.
And if you could paint a picture of your next 10 years, what picture do you see?
It's interesting. I'm going through this shift right now where, and I don't have the answer for this, but I've always been one that looks at that, like, where am I going to be? Let's set some goals, right? And then let's move in that direction. And that's a very physical thing in the world that is taught. However, the deeper I go in meditation, the more I realize that I'm not in control of anything. And the illusion of control is where our ego believes that we're in control. But the truth is, everything is happening through the energetics of the universe. Just like my heart is beating, I'm not controlling it. My blood is pumping. You know, thoughts are moving through. I don't control any of it. The universe is moving and I have no control. I don't like that. I don't think humans like that because it means that we don't have control. And the fact that we believe we have control, like we hit a goal, and in one level, we think we did it. On another level, that potentially was just an energetic karmic movement, because what's happening is karmically, and I do believe that karma means action. So every action we take creates another action. And so what Ramana Maharshi would say is everybody has karma, and that's, a lot of people think it's bad, but it's good and bad karma. But the only reason it's called good and bad is because our mind creates good and bad, which is duality. And there's no such thing as good and bad. It's just action and reaction, action and results. And so when we pull back from the doing nature of us always having to do, and we start being and start watching what happens, it's all going to still happen. And it's amazing because it's a really big shift from the consciousness we have on the planet, which is we got to go do to have. And what I'm finding is we don't have to do anything. It's all being done through us through inspired action. If we're sitting with it and watching, people will show up, things will happen, synchronicity will occur if we allow ourselves to see, watch, and not get in the way of karma. And the thing I'm finding really interesting is karma is not just a physical action. Our thinking actually can cause karma because we either try to push a thought away. I just did a video on the shadow work, right? So on the shadow of ourselves. And when thoughts come up that we don't like, humans tend to push them down. They don't want to feel it. They don't want to express it. That's called the repressed thoughts that become a graveyard in our life, and then suppressing thoughts, right? And so what happens is we build all this pressure, pushing all this down that we call negative. We don't like it. It's our shadow. And then what happens is eventually it bursts out and causes a dis, which is dis-ease and disorder and all the challenges. So for me, allowing the thought, not repressing it, not suppressing it, would be more healthy than trying to resist it, which is going to cause karma and more reactions that keep me stuck into this chain of physicality. So it's kind of a weird one because I think people don't like that. They feel like we always have to do something. But I think the more lazy we become in the sense of watching what's happening, we become the observer and realize that it's all being done through us instead of us doing it. And then the ego doesn't know what to do with that because the ego wants to take credit for everything. So it's I'm on that edge. So I can't say exactly because I'm definitely still doing things, but I'm moving on that path to see what's going to happen as I slow down my doing and just open myself up to the being and see what shows up in my environment.
And if you look back now, Vince, 10 years or 20 years, and you see Vince then and you see him now, what are you the most proud of or happy of or grateful of?
So 20 years down the road?
Or 10.
I think, 10 or 20. I think looking back, I would just be very, very excited that I was able to dive deep within myself and to not allow my mind to control my life, to be more present in the moment that I'm in, you know, right now, right here, and to allow source energy, to allow life to move through me without me having to resist everything and create and try to fix and deploy and, you know, like I'm an orchestrator of the whole thing, to allow myself to surrender. So to me, the greatest thing I can do is to let go and trust that all is happening perfectly. Even in the darkest of times, there's always light in that darkness that allows us to grow. And so for me, I think it's just letting go of the reins and giving them up to source or the absolute and trusting that whatever's supposed to happen will happen and I can breathe easy. Now, a good example of that is when Ramana Maharshi, who's a guru that I follow, he's passed away a long time ago, but you know, he said, why would you get on a train and carry your suitcases and keep them on your head or in your hands when you're on the train? The train is already carrying you. Put down your luggage and relax. And so that's kind of the metaphor for source energy is already doing it. And we keep thinking we have to carry everything.
Beautiful. If you have now three truths you would give to dedicate to our audience, what would you say? Maybe three sentences or three sharings?
Three, huh? That's a good number. Three, I would say the first one would be to take time every day to observe your thoughts. And you know, a lot of people think meditation is about stopping thought, and it's not. It's just about quieting yourself and start to watch the thoughts as they arise. And what will make it easier instead of following the thought is just to ask who's thinking it. This thought just came up, and weird thoughts will come up when you're sitting by yourself, and they don't even seem like they're yours. Like, who are these people in my head? I've had amazing thoughts and I'm like, I don't even know what this is. But instead of following the story, I just ask who is thinking this. And of course, then it goes deeper into myself. So that's number one. That would really, I think, help people if they do a consistent practice of this. They'll discover a lot about themselves. Number two is, I think, really important that we start our day and end our day with that solitude and gratitude for what we do have and what we are experiencing. And that kind of puts bookmarks on the day. And I know before we go to bed at night, our mind is going into the deeper brain waves. And that's another thing. I mean, if you want to create, the law of the universe is the law of gender, another law. And when you go to bed at night, whatever your conscious mind thinks about that last hour before you go to bed, that is the masculine energy that's now moving from the conscious to the unconscious mind. And the unconscious is not self-selective. It's not going to make a decision. It just creates whatever the conscious mind puts into it. So if the conscious mind is masculine and it's birthing, it's penetrating the subconscious with an idea, with thoughts, and the subconscious will go to work to create that. So it's really important when we go to bed at night that we put the right stuff in our mind and we think about that so that it moves into our subconscious and creates what you desire instead of watching the news at night, which my mom used to do. And then you actually are creating a lot of trauma that you're going to wake up with in the morning. So I think starting the day and ending the day with gratitude and the right thinking will start kind of bookmark the day, bookend the day properly. And so that's two. And then number three would be, I think this is something I've been challenged with, and that is getting our diet right that creates a higher frequency, because the foods today are blocking us. And this could go with media too, but basically what we take in is either going to elevate our frequency or drop it. And I realized, you know, I've had a sugar tooth all my life, and that's really a bad, I can't say bad. That's really a toxic thing. I mean, it says action result. So if I eat sugar, I have a result of inflammation. I have a result of different kinds of diseases. So I also know when I eat healthy vegetables, greens, organic, I have higher frequency. I feel better. I have more joy. My mind's not all discombobulated. So I think really watching what we eat and put into our body, whether it's food or social media or whatever, has an impact. And I think if we're aware of that and we try to, or we just focus on really bringing in the healthy stuff and keeping at bay the stuff that does not benefit us, it's going to make a huge difference. And it goes along the lines with the other two things I talked about.
So thank you so much, Vince. It has been an honor to have you on my podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you for such great questions. It was really good and challenging, and I like it.
And thank you, dear listener, for spending your precious time with us today. And in case you feel worthless and nobody seems to like you, we tell you, you're amazing. We love you. And you're a gift to everyone who crosses your path. And please tell yourself these sentences over and over again. Have an amazing day, and talk to you next week.